I'm Jill Anderson. This is the Harvard EdCast. Andrea Zafiraku knows the arts is critically important in education. In her work as an arts and textiles teacher, she's witnessed firsthand how the arts can be transformative in the classroom and reach those who can't speak the language or have special needs. She sees the arts as a tool of inclusion and resilience. It's something she's learned over the past 13 years at the Alberton Community School in London. The school is wildly diverse, with about 130 languages spoken. And Andrea has learned at least a basic phrase in 35 of those languages to greet her students. It's this going above and beyond attitude that earned her the 2018 Global Teacher Prize. While visiting the Harvard Graduate School of Education recently, Andrea stopped by to chat about the power of the arts education and how important the arts are for all children. But I had to ask her what it's been like over the past few months traveling the world as an ambassador for education, and particularly what it means to be dubbed the world's best teacher.
It's absolutely terrifying, simply because it is huge, okay? It's a huge responsibility. And if I was to be honest to say, do I think I'm the best world's best teacher? The answer is, of course not, because I don't actually think there is such a person who can be nominated, singled out in this whole world as being the world's best teacher. That title goes to somebody like Martin Luther King or to Mahatma Gandhi, you know, to Jesus, not me. However, what I think is really important is what it means, and this means that as a practitioner, as a teacher, this really raises the profile of teaching and what it means and the significance and the importance of the profession in the world. And I'm here to be an ambassador for them. I'm here to say, wake up, teaching and being a practitioner of education is the most important profession that exists.
You know, I love that you said being an ambassador for education, because that's a lot of what you've been doing. You're traveling, going to a lot of places. You're here in Cambridge right now. And can you tell me a little bit about what you're hearing from fellow teachers as you're traveling? Are you hearing some common themes, and what are they?
Yeah, I am. It worries me, actually. I've got some concerns. And with teachers, there's a camaraderie as well. So we trust each other. So some of the things which they're experiencing foremost is the fact that they don't feel that they are valued and respected in the classroom. So if we've got a situation whereby teachers are having to work another job just to make ends meet or just to afford resources, what is that saying? Are we expecting that from doctors as well? Mm-hmm. That's one big thing. How are we valuing our teachers? How are we celebrating them? How are we ensuring that they are feeling valued in their own worlds and communities? And the other thing I would like to point out is also, I've noticed that there has been many questions and concerns about diversity and about migration, that many teachers are finding it quite difficult to teach or have resources that supports them when they have got other cultures joining the school. Now, I find that quite unique because, you know, I see that as an opportunity. I see that as a really exciting challenge. You know, you've got a new child there, new to this world, who comes from a huge amount of background, another culture, and has experienced something completely unique to your world. Let's learn. Let's find out more. So I'm just worried that there could be this almost fear of inclusion, which we need to sort out. Because I've got a feeling and I've got a firm belief that our children will be growing up working on a global level, mixing with other people who have got different colour skins, different languages, and we need to have the skills to adapt to that. And we need to be appreciative of their cultures as well. I will never forget, and this, I think, literally broke my heart, but then at the same time gave me so much inspiration and power and determination and strength. And I've got my Wonder Woman kind of pose in front of you, but a teacher asked me, do I think that girls should have the same education as boys?
And where was that question asked?
It was in a country in South America. I was stunned. I was silent because I was in a huge teaching conference there, and I was giving a speech to about 300 people in the room. my response was, how dare anyone think they shouldn't? It made me think, my gosh, there is that mindset mentality still that girls should not achieve, or there is a cap for where our girls should stand in society. I'm really worried that that still exists, but I'm so excited because we're going to change that. And we're changing that already with the women movement that's going around the world. So we'll get there. We'll get there.
You are an arts educator.
I am. Yeah.
And
I'm proud to be.
We were walking over here and we were chatting a little bit about arts. And I kept thinking to myself, the narrative around arts education really doesn't seem like it's changed immensely since I was in school, which was decades ago. And just the idea that it's the first thing cut, it's the first thing to go, even with standards and all the pressures of assessment, at least here in America, I just couldn't get over how, when you really think about it, that narrative hasn't seemed to change. We're going on decades of arts not really being as valued in schools.
And that hurts me so much to hear that, because I see how it transforms my children every single day. Those magic moments whereby you see a child having that eureka moment through a piece of artwork or through the perseverance to get to that piece of artwork. That is extraordinary. So what do the arts bring? The arts bring so much. And at the moment, they're bringing a huge amount of money to our economy. I mean, I believe in the US, it's about $760 million to your economy, which is the fastest growing. So evidently, there are careers out there. But what they do bring in the classroom, I mean, I see resilience being formed. I see inquiry. I see experimentation. I see risk-taking. I see opportunities for students to fail and learn from their failures and to feel okay that they're failing and to then persevere and manage to get on top of their game. I see joy. I see happiness. I see mindfulness. I see children heal through creating a piece of artwork. You know, with a very fast-paced world that we're living in, we need to find ways of nourishment and self-perseverance. I think that's what these subjects do.
How does arts really provide that resilience?
So if you're thinking about a child who's really battling on a violin piece and they can't quite get that note,
right.
And they're persevering and they're persevering. And how many hours of practice? How many hours of practice? How many hours of practice? And they still can't get it, but they eventually do. Another example I can give to you is just literally the pain, the trying to mix up a color and make it accurate, and painting and the craft, the skill that's needed, the patience that's needed. I mean, this is resilience as well. Because yes, it is very subjective. What's a good piece of work? What's not so successful? For me, it's the journey that has got the child there. What have they learned? What skills have they brought with them on that journey? And I think that's what we need to focus on.
Right. I think maybe even that's a greater reflection of just maybe society generally not valuing the arts, even outside of school.
I've heard this week the arts being related to soft skills. What are soft skills? For me, soft doesn't mean strong. It means weak.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, the arts bring human skills to our armor. They explore skills which, you know, you can't really see as such in one sense, but you can feel. So confidence gaining, yes, you can feel that. Yeah.
And so one of the other things you talked about earlier was about inclusivity in education. And arts and art education can be incredibly inclusive. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that and how that has looked for you as an educator in your classroom?
So I have the privilege of teaching all types of students who have maybe very gifted or maybe have got extreme special educational needs. So I have seen students who have got special educational needs achieve the same standard of work, if not better, than students who are very talented and very able. But I've also seen students who cannot communicate in English still produce quality pieces. So it's about the language that we use as well. You don't need to necessarily be able to communicate with your voice or with your mouth mm-hmm. to be able to create a piece of work. That's still very much you. That's still very much you own that piece of work. And that there demonstrates your abilities. So if you have got special educational needs, it doesn't matter. You're not, that label doesn't exist anymore. If you cannot speak English, doesn't matter. That label doesn't exist. If you cannot read or write, it doesn't matter. So this is why it's inclusive. You don't need to be able to be a certain colour, a certain age, or speak a certain language to be able to be included in the arts.
In that case, how do you integrate children with disabilities? Or if I know that the school you work in has a huge, diverse population and lots of different languages.
You know, bearing in mind that many students come to my classroom with already preconceptions and a stigma of what they can achieve. Mm-hmm. So my job is to break that down and find the pathway in. And yes, you do differentiate to the to the death in this particular case. So I will make sure there's a piece of work that one child can access easily. And then once they build that confidence, then they can access another piece of work. So I think it's about you knowing their ability and you providing the key, the entrance. For children who are, you know, who've never been to a museum, who maybe have never been, have only been in the country for a couple of months, I would not put them a Rembrandt piece in front of them or tell them all, let's discuss about Renaissance art. I would try and find a work that is similar to their own culture to entice them. And we will talk about it. We'll look at it. We'll work from it. We'll create something, which is then what I call my hook, because they've now allowed me to enter their world and feel part of their community. And as a result, they're now welcome into my community of teaching. We do this with maybe Gujarati art, Islamic art, African art, Sri Lankan art. And I think it just provides, again, that idea of cultural respect and the value of other people's identity, which is crucial in all schools. And again, you know, in my school, we have a Somali choir. So, mm-hmm. you know, and we have a Japanese choir. Gujarati children are singing Japanese songs and Somali songs. And that's beautiful. Isn't that incredible? It's about really breaking down barriers and really trying to see through what should be done to actually what needs to be done. What do we need to provide as the basics for our children to thrive and for them to then access the rest of the education?
You know, listening to you, you're so extraordinary. It's just so inspiring. And I can't help but wonder, when you started teaching 13 years ago, what did you go into the classroom thinking what a teacher was compared to now? Like, has it changed for you?
It's so much better. It's so much better. Right. I didn't think that I would be having the days that I've had in my school or the conversations that I've had, good and bad, the experiences I've had, the joy that I've had, the sadness I've experienced, the challenges that I've faced. I went into the profession knowing it was going to be brilliant, but not thinking that I was going to be experiencing lots of different types of emotions and journeys and being part of people's lives and, you know, really helping a child, not just through their education, but through their personal life. And that for me is such an honor, mm-hmm. you know, to have that human connectivity. It is the most spectacular, splendid, honorable profession there is.
So you never thought or wanted to leave the profession?
Never. Even now in this particular year, whereby it would probably make my life so much more easy if I did just say to, and I have said to my head teacher, you know, should I just take a year off just to kind of do my globalness? And then I thought to myself, well, how am I going to stay sane this year? How am I going to feed myself in terms of what I need? And I need to be in the classroom environment. I think it was 2 days ago, I had the honour of visiting a school in Brooklyn and the James Madison School. Melissa, another Varki ambassador, said to me, do you fancy teaching a lesson? And I was like, oh my God, yes. She organised me for me to do a ceramics lesson. And I walked into that classroom. I was home. The environment smelt the same. The children looked the same. There was nothing different. And the lesson was great. Children loved it. The staff loved it. And I came out of there buzzing.
So how do you stay inspired? It doesn't seem like it's difficult for you to stay inspired, but it seems it is for many teachers.
Well, the problem is how to stay away from the negativity. because right. there is so much negativity about teaching. Maybe that's not the right word, stay away. It's not stay away. It's think of it as an opportunity. So I'm quite a positive person. So there's no point in moaning unless you can do something about it. And that's my attitude in life. So, and again, I'm lucky because I work in an environment whereby I feed off the energy from my colleagues. We really support each other. Mm-hmm. We've been together for a long time and we've got each other's backs. When you have that environment and you go to work in those conditions and then the children are happy to see you, they love coming to your classrooms because they enjoy the experiences. They know they're going to have fun. They know they're going to learn. That's why I do it. That's what helps me.
Not every teacher has that fortune of the same environment, the same type of school culture, really. And for those teachers, what words do you have for them of maybe inspiration to help get through a week, you know?
You know, I'm just so sorry that the whole world can't experience what I've experienced the last 5 months. Words blessed and grateful doesn't even start to comprehend, but I'm completely aware that we are valued, that your children that you are teaching do value you. They may not say it to you, but they feel it. They may not demonstrate it to you, but they do feel it and they need it and they need you. And I know you're probably ripping out your hair and, you know, you want to quit, you want to give up and you're having a bad day and you've got no support and you've got no resources. But just remember why you're doing this. And the reason why you're doing this is just to change a life and change the world and give our children tools and strategies and knowledge to be able to go and think for themselves and create success in their own worlds.
Thank you so much, Andrea. This has been really inspiring for me. And I'm not a teacher, so.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Andrea Zafaraku is the 2018 Global Teacher Prize winner and is an arts and textiles teacher at the Alperton Community School in London. I'm Jill Anderson. This is the Harvard EdCast produced by the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Thanks for listening.